Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. We're at Bally's Las Vegas, and the players are now really starting to settle in, and they're also having breakfast and getting ready and meeting one player after another. The one player that everybody is asking about and is going to miss, and they miss already, is Nick Tamaro. But it was a very special year. Nick had other priorities, and he'll be back next year undoubtedly. Nick, good morning.
Steve, how you doing?
Good, and you know, I don't have to tell you. You're probably getting tons of texts and calls, and everybody. They're all going to be probably trying to utilize your opinion to help parlay it into success here.
Well, I texted some of the guys this morning, and I said no turf, pretty much anywhere but Santa Anita, and no aqueduct. So 5-1 is the new cap. My man Jonathan Kinchin was very happy to hear that because he's. He likes that range of price. So
well, and apparently he forgot. I guess Pete forgot to bring the new chalk eating weasel T-shirts that he had made, and Jonathan absolutely needs to sport those. Now he makes use of them. And any advice for? I got a lot of players listening already. Got the headsets in. Give some players some insight. I know you tweeted about it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, on the non-contest front, I said make sure you have fun and eat good dinners because it's really all about the experience. As far as the contest goes, you know, I mean, I've always been a pick-who-you-like kind of guy. I can't bring myself to take a 30-1 shot because I simply need a big price. So if you handicap the race conventionally, look at who you would bet on a regular basis anyway. And, you know, if you're the type of person like me that really wants to focus on proper pace scenarios and maybe advantageous pace scenarios, go through the races very briefly, give yourself a minute to a minute and a half to look at it, to assess the favorite, and to assess the pace scenario, and, you know, look and see. If it looks like it's going to be a slow pace, then start looking at speed. If it looks like it's going to be a fast pace, obviously look for horses coming from a little bit off of it. So don't change your approach up all that much. Certainly stick with what got you there. If you got there, you certainly did something right. And remember with this entire soliloquy that I've not had that much success in the NHC, so just keep that in mind. If you wanted to talk to me about the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge or you know, the Belmont Stakes Challenge or something like that, then I'd probably be a lot more useful. But, I mean, what do I always say? I go into the NHC looking for the social part of it. I try to make a lot of jokes at the table and make sure we have good dinner reservations because, you know, it's a good experience in that sense.
Well, it's good advice in any sense, and let's dive in. We've got really just 10 minutes to spend with you, so let's get right to it and talk about this sequence in New York that starts in New York with the Wingfield, and we're off and running with this year's cross-country pick five sequence, and Tampa and Oaklawn involved as well. It's a really fun sequence, and again, challenging. Last week, Nick, almost an $11,000 payday that was punctuated by that crazy-priced Peter Miller horse that just got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, and really, he was the only one that seemed like he was maybe a little off the wall. So it handled almost $100,000. That number should grow. Obviously, being all stakes tomorrow is going to help quite a bit. The kickoff leg, the Wingfield, is probably all about what you want to do in terms of Secret Rules and Quixotic, who look like the two horses that are going to command most of the attention in the wagering. And I think that Secret Rules, to me, has a little bit of an edge. I know the Quixotic speed figures look a little bit better, but I believe that Secret Rules is probably going to be a little bit more capable of rating in the early stages. And I thought that his win last time was, obviously, it was quite authoritative when you look at the margin, but he was in control of that race from the start. And you might argue with necessarily what was behind him. The trash talker from Dermot Magner, who won on Cigar Mile Day, was back facing winners for the first time that day, but Secret Rules really handled him quite easily. I think he's in the driver's seat in this field, and I expect him to be very, very tough. I thought the pedigree on Old Chestnut was interesting, given that he's out of Poolland, who, of course, was a Grade 1 winner on the dirt, and he's primarily done his running on synthetics or turf. So you'd like to see what ends up happening maybe with him on the surface change, but I think the focus of my attention is going to be on Secret Rules.
You know, I was talking to Andy last night. We were looking at this race. He thought that he thought that Montauk traffic was worth a second glance.
Yeah, I think it depends on whether you how you feel about the surface the day that, and it felt like you probably didn't want to be inside. Now, this is one of those kind of wacky Linda Rice horses that obviously had nothing go right at Laurel and then came up and beat a little bit of a suspect maiden field. I think the disadvantage that he's at is that it's a little bit more of a class acid test, so to speak, facing winners in this kind of scenario, because I do think Secret Rules has the potential to be a pretty nice sprinter. So does Quixotic, for that matter. So I think it might be asking a bit much. However, if you believe, which I think a lot of people are going to, that the pace in that race is going to be pretty strong, then obviously he'd be in position to benefit, because we know, I mean, he was basically shot out of a cannon around the quarter pole last time, and making a move through on what could have been a dead rail was awfully impressive. So I couldn't really make a big stance against anybody wanting to take him. I just felt like the speedy nature of a horse like Secret Rules might give him a little bit of an advantage, but I think by all means you'd have to include Montauk traffic on your ticket.
Let's turn to the. Is it the? I don't have. What's the order? I don't have the order in front of me. Actually, here I got it. Yeah, Tampa. Yeah, it goes Aqueduct, then the Tampa 9, 10, 11, and then the King Cotton. So let's go 9, 10, 11, the Suncoast, the Tampa Bay, and the Sam Davis.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, as far as the three Tampa races go, and not that we're going to go backwards on them, but I think a lot of people are going to use the Sam Davis as an opportunity to really narrow it down to Independence Hall and Ajaweed, and maybe not anything beyond that. So it should give you a little bit more of an opportunity to be somewhat wide open in the races leading into it. I thought We the Clouds looked very interesting in the Suncoast. I think the Progeny of Constitution will be fine getting to two turns, and I thought that she probably did the best running in the worst part of the race last time. So I think the stretch out is going to do her a world of good. I also felt like Motu has been effective going two turns and should run well. Comical's a horse that looked very interesting to me for Steve Asmussen shipping over, given that his entire stable is centered in the Midwest right now, to bring her here in a scenario where she ends up getting Joel Rosario. I thought there was a lot to like there. So I kind of felt like this was a race where you needed to be pretty much about as wide as possible. I thought Embossed looked like a win candidate. I'm going to take more of a negative stance on Turtle Track, who I thought probably will end up being a little bit more effective around one turn. So this will be kind of a spread race. I think you want to take a pretty liberal approach to it and not find yourself going narrow, because it does look very wide open.
Well, and there does seems to be pace. I just talked about this with Marty McGee, and it looks like there's pace, and there's stretch out horses that should prompt the pace. But you know, we know how that sometimes, you know, ends up not materializing. So 2, 4, 5, and 9 as A's for Nick in the Suncoast, and that gets us to the Endeavor. And I take that back. That gets us to the Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and you know, this is a race where you've got a couple of really interesting barn changes and horses going to barns that win at a very high percentage, including Devamani and Renaissance Frolic. Devamani, of course, will take quite a bit more money, first-time Chad Brown. Renaissance Frolic is making his first start for Safi Joseph, who seems to be winning at an exorbitantly high rate pretty much all winter. That being said, Caribou Club's the horse to beat, but the horse to beat to me is March to the Arch. I know he faced weaker competition last time, but he overcame an extremely slow pace. I think he's going to get some pace to run at in here. And I mean, it feels with Got Stormy running a little bit earlier and a couple of horses along the way, that the Cassie barn is pretty well set for a big card. And I thought March to the Arch is a horse that really, this is his niche. A mile and a 16th in grade 3, grade 2 type competition is probably where he's going to be at his absolute best. And I think being drawn inside, he can save ground. It's very, very difficult to lose ground on the Tampa turf because there's no banking on it. So you really want to be inside as much as you can, and I think he stands to get a great trip.
Any threats from Hembry and Caribou Club and you know, first-time Chad Brown with Devamani?
Yeah, I think Caribou Club's very dangerous. He obviously ran a winning race in the Artie Schiller last time, just making that first move into an extremely fast pace. I thought that Devamani was a horse that probably it could end up proving to be a little bit better going a little longer. But look, you're expecting an improvement here. Not that Rob Atrus doesn't do an excellent job, but Chad Brown, obviously, with a turf router, you're figuring is going to be a bit of a move up. You have horses like Henry coming off the layoff. I'd be more inclined to give him one. He's not really a whole heck of a lot of a winning type. So I'd be probably a little bit more critical there. And I felt like the pace between Halliday and Real Story would set it up more for somebody from a little bit off of it. My kind of off-the-wall long shot type would be Renaissance Frolic, if anything, although I don't expect to get the 15-1 that you're seeing there on the morning line.
Now, and that's a Marty McGee favorite. Helped Marty cash a big pick five at Churchill last fall. That gets us to the Sam Davis.
Yeah, I mean, it looks on paper like a two-horse race between Ajaweed and Independence Hall. It'll be interesting to see what Premier Star has to offer. I really don't see Premier Star going off a shorter price than Ajaweed. I think there's a lot of backing there, and he's a horse who comes off a very strong performance in the Rems. And I don't think Shotsky really disgraced himself at all or didn't prove the strong form of that race. And I do think that to an extent, Ajaweed is going to get a good setup in here, as it figures that between Chapaloo and Premier Star and No Getting Over Me is stretching out, and Independence Hall should have some bit of early speed. You could even see Albert Park being somewhat forwardly placed, that the pace should really be there for an off-the-pace type, and that might be all you need. Hopefully, Joel Rosario keeps him somewhat within range, and I think I would favor him in terms of maybe ranking the horses I want to use, but I think you use him in Independence Hall as A's, and you probably back up just for insanity purposes with a horse like Premier Star in case he ends up proving to be just that good, stretching out to two turns.
There you go. There's your Tampa side of things. And, of course, two of these races on the docket for NHC players. And Tampa in general is going to be utilized, I think, plenty Saturday and Sunday. Oaklawn as well. And surprisingly, Golden Gate. I don't know if you heard the early part of the show, Nick. That cancellation from last week ended up filling up the entry box at Golden Gate for today and tomorrow.
Yeah, I make the buyer figures there. So if you have anybody has any gripes on how they look, go ahead and let me know. But yeah, it figured it to be a good week of racing with the impromptu week off.
Well, no gripes, just praise, just tons of praise.
Sure.
Nick, Oaklawn closes out the anchor leg of the sequence, the King Cotton. And we talked earlier to Jeff Taylor, and who is the chart caller for Equibase at Oaklawn and has been from the area and knows the track pretty darn well. And this race came up kind of interesting. Whitmore, of course, a lot of fun. And good old Wilbo, now 8, making his seasonal debut for Chris Hartman, an old favorite of mine, 12-time winner. This is a good group.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the main two. I think Wilbo probably has a little bit of an edge just pace-wise because he can be a little bit more forwardly placed than the one-run Whitmore. But, you know, what Whitmore's done at Oaklawn is undeniable. He's been incredible. And the only defeat last year obviously came to Mattoli, who beat just about everyone he faced last year. And so, I imagine that if he's anywhere back to his best form, then Whitmore will be very tough to beat. I thought Share the Upside maybe could be a little interesting. I don't love the inside post, but I do love that he's going to be a horse that's forwardly placed, and it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of speed in there. So it seems like a situation where Ricardo Santana is going to have to ask him right out of the gate. And if he's able to get the lead, then he might prove to be somewhat tough. He's obviously kind of an Oaklawn horse for course. And one thing that you see looking at Oaklawn somewhat regularly is horses that have done well there in the past generally
yes.
continue on. So I felt like he was one that you wanted to include. And obviously you're talking about the three horses we've mentioned are all big Oaklawn horses for the course. So I think the winner will come from those three. And if you want to kind of back the ticket up by looking at that first and working your way towards the front of it, then you know that you can pretty solidly and faithfully finish with three.
Well, Silver Ride deserves a mention, no?
Well, second time Robertino Diodoro would be looking to win a race off of a quick stake race off a quick comeback. He won with a Special Relativity last week.
Yes.
Off the 1 week return, and this would be a 2 week return. Look, Silver Ride is always going to be a friend of mine. He won the first leg of a big pick five at 35-1 at Saratoga many moons ago in 2016. So you're never going to get me to say anything negative about Silver Ride. I don't know if the race is going to unfold for him properly, but he's clearly a horse in a barn that does very, very well at that racetrack, who likes it as well. And if he can maybe be a little bit more forwardly placed, he could overcome what looks like it might be a relatively moderate pace.
Well, it's a fun group and a familiar group, and that's always helpful, and a very good cross-country pick five week two. There's also going to be the broadcast on Fox 2 for NYRA originating, and then they'll feather in these races, a lot of these races, Tampa and Oaklawn, for the cross-country pick five. So we can look forward to that. And, Nick, we look forward to you checking in next week, reaction to NHC. Do you have who's going to win this? There's the biggest handicapping challenge.
Yeah, I like the Pete's Monster podcast for the NHC. He asked everybody what their fair odds should be. Nobody came up with their fair odds, which are really about 1,000 to 1. But Clocker John, that's who I think is going to win.
Nice. Clocker John, love it. John Nichols, got to be great. That would be a popular victory, to say the least. Nick, thanks so much. NTAMM, N-T-A-M-M, 1215 on Twitter, of course. And Nick will be watching, and you're going to do some comment. I might even reach out to you over the weekend and bring you in for some thoughts, you know, and some strategy.
Go for it. I'd love to get involved.
Perfect. That's a deal. Nick Tamro, everybody. 90 minutes in here from Bally's Las Vegas, the weekend preview. And we'll head to the break, and we've got Kevin Kirstein is going to be here in the next 15 minutes or so. I'm going to get Gus over here to get his weekend thoughts as well as his reaction to playing in his first NHC. Mike Welch as well in hour three, and Ed DeRosa, and I think I'm going to have to reach out to Dave Grenig. I haven't mentioned it yet this morning. I just didn't want to start the day on the incredibly sad note. But certainly for New York racing in particular, and for horsemen that come and have competed in New York the last, let's say, 20 years, Bruce Johnstone passing yesterday, and Bruce fought as courageously and remarkably, really, against a very challenging cancer, and originally given real short time, like maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago. They gave him 6 months, give or take. And anybody who knows Bruce, I mean, as strapping and as strong an individual as you'd ever meet, but as kind and as sweet and thoughtful and helpful, was the perfect horseman's liaison when he quit training. Charlie Hayward hired him for NYRA, and he was invaluable. There was no circumstance that happened around the track on race day or any time that Bruce could not resolve or help mediate if necessary. He was familiar with every possible scenario and was just invaluable, and will be greatly missed, being mourned widely this morning in New York. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRFSports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Dick on SiriusXM Radio.
When you touch my hand and talk sweet talk, I got a knocking in my knees and a wobble in my walk. I'm trembling and I'm shaking. And when you take me in your arms to talk romance, my heart stops dough and the Saint Vitus dance and I'm panting. And I'm shaking.
A little Willie John. Love it. It's early in the morning time here, not back east. 10, almost 10:40, and here 7:38. NHC 2020, and a rare. I'm just realizing this, Gus. This is a unique opportunity because I think we've only ever had phone visits, right? Oh, hold on. What's going on there? What's going on? Oh, there we go. Now, it's tough to hear from Gus if the mic's not plugged in.
Okay, we're good now.
There we go.
I think one time I was in the studio with you at Fort Lauderdale at Margate.
Yeah?
Years ago, yeah.
Okay, all right. You got a better memory than me. Casey's in the studio. Casey will confirm that. Case, do you remember Gus being in the studio with us?
Yep.
Yeah?
It was a Friday morning.
Yes.
Yep.
He says
10 years ago or so.
Jesus, don't even. Holy cow. All right. Well,
flies.
It's great to have you here and so excited for you to be in this contest. And how often had you even, tried to qualify before this year?
Well, actually, I haven't. I started when they did the promotion with you last year. I think that got a lot of players involved, and I was definitely one of them. And, I did qualify for $1 last year, and from now on, I'm going to be on board with it. This year, I'm actually I'm helping out, just watching a couple friends that are actually in the contest, and hopefully I want to try this year to be back next year. This is something else. If you're a horse player out there, you definitely want to be in here. The atmosphere, the buzz, just the camaraderie, just with all the horse players, it's very special. And I think every horse player out there that's a serious horse player needs to try to make their way on. If not, just come out here and check it out. It's something else.
Well, and the format or the layout with this room is providing for the opportunity for more spouses, for more friends to come that had wasn't available in previous years when it was played Red Rocks and at Treasure Island, there was barely enough room for the players, let alone guests. But they've got a whole row of tables in the back for observers and for friends and family. And this is gotten nothing but rave reviews from everybody about moving over here to Bally. So that part of it, a total win. We can turn to some handicapping, Gus, but even before we start capping any races, let's talk about the future wager. It's one of your favorite things. And I talked to Marty McGee earlier. We got Kevin Kirstein, who's going to join us shortly. In fact, there's KK right there. He's standing over there. So we'll get KK next. What do you make of this pool too? There's a little bit of critique about some of the horse choices and some horses that might have been interesting that weren't included.
Yeah, pool two is I think it's right when it starts getting really serious here, and you can find some value. I mean, I tend to agree. There's a couple horses maybe could have switched up, but it's kind of tough here at this stage in the game. You know, with the Derby still that far out. There's some you could get some value, you know, and that recency thing, especially tomorrow with the Sam S. Davis. If Independence Hall, you know, has a convincing win, he's going to take a bunch of money. And if you like someone else, that horse might float up. Yeah, you know, you definitely want to wait till late stages to put your wager in. I think tomorrow's Sam Davis is going to be having a tremendous effect on which way a lot of the players go.
Any other names in there that you know that you like where they stand this far out?
Yeah, there's a few I got my eye on, and probably you know Dennis's moment. Actually, he's 12-1, and I think you know he's kind of out of sight, but he's working well. I think he's still pointing to the Fountain of Youth. I think he might float it up, you know, 15, maybe even I don't, maybe 20-1's a pipe dream.
Yeah.
But Independence Hall has a convincing win. He's going to come down. The impressive win last week by Tiz the Law. He's going to take a lot of action. And, of course, all three Baffords are going to take a lot of action. I think Dennis's moment, I mean, I really think highly of the horse. And, you know, he did nothing wrong with anything, you know, at the Breeders' Cup. That stumble, he was 4-5 that day, and now people are kind of off him just because he hasn't been seen. I still think he might be at the top of the class at the end of all this.
And, you know, it's funny because if not for the stumble in the Breeders' Cup, and you know, not to say that you know, that categorically he would have won that race, you can't say that, but given the circumstance and the, you know, the mysterious result you ended up with Storm the Court and No D'Or, if Dennis's moment gets out of the gate and runs his race, what are we looking at? And it's as if
a different story.
Yeah, it's as if this horse can't do anything in the rest of his career because he stumbled in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Yeah. It's a little silly.
I think so. I think it's overreaction, and I think you can maybe get some value in this pool with him. Believe it or not, it's something you would never thought going into the Breeders'
Cup
that you would get at this kind of value.
Fair point well taken. Well, you mentioned Independence Hall and his presence. You do have Premier Star, and we're going to talk to KK in a minute about how Premier Star got folded into this in favor or, you know, to the exclusion of a couple of other graded stake performers, including like Royal Act and High Velocity and others. How do you see this race? Because I do not. Independence Hall has got. There's at least three horses here that are easily within his range. I mean, yes, there's the outlying Nashua performance, but then you know he came back to earth. You know, to start the year in the Jerome, and I. You know,
I'll tell you what. I was at the debut for Premier Star. That was on a classical day, the Caribbean at Gulfstream. And I watched him in a post parade. He looked great. I mean, he absolutely he came up, ranged up, beat a really nice horse. A lot of people.
Caro Caro
that came back to win. And I'll tell you what, Steve. When I was right by the winner's circle at the end, that horse was not breathing at all. He was not blowing at all. He looked fresh as a cucumber. And you know, with the mile and the 16th, these type of horses, in my opinion, I think he's got a humongous shot. I think his price might float up, too, because I think 6-5 on Independence Hall is a little short. I'm thinking 4-5, maybe 3-5 come post time, and that might bump a Premier Star up. I think he's more than capable at mile and 16th. I mean, I definitely have a question, him going to the 9 furlongs and further. But on this type of track and the way the race sets up, I think he's got a huge shot.
What else we'd like over the weekend? What more of the Tampa action?
Yes, spotlight selections are Tampa. They got a nice card. Today, I believe they're fast and good. I think by tomorrow you're going to have fast and firm. There's no rain forecast, so it should be a nice day. Back half of the card is really good. I mean, you got Stormy in there. She shows
not
up there.
Not even the back half. The starting maidens. With those maiden races, the 4th, the 5th, the 7th. Yep. There's an allowance in the 6th. It's a very good card and among the best really of tomorrow's choices. Not the Gulfstream card. There's that interesting 7th race, mm-hmm. And there's the Suwannee River that are both compelling, but the rest of it is nothing special. Mm-hmm.
No, and then, you know, we don't know how the track's going to play. It should dry out by tomorrow at Gulfstream. But, like you mentioned, Tampa, solid card, 12 races. They do it right. Beautiful turf course. That's one of my favorite turf courses in the country, Steve. I mean, it's always in perfect shape. And got some nice Philly race is pretty good, too, the Suncoast. There's some horses there that can move up, you know, down the road as well.
Excellent. Any other? You got any other spot? Any other plays to chip in?
Not really. I just focused on Tampa tomorrow with the spotlight selections
at Brisnet.
And then today we're going to dabble a little bit. It's just a lot of work today, and you got to take what they give you here with some of these tracks being off the turf and some rain forecast. But we do have some plays today at Oaklawn. Oaklawn. I think that's going to be one of the main tracks here at the NHC today with the field sizes, and I think that might be the make or break it here for some of the players today.
I keep pointing to Golden Gate, given the fact that the field size ended up bigger than ever, and there's going to be a lot of players, and I'll tell you who benefits. The Canadian guys, the Woodbine crowd that plays Woodbine and the synthetic extensively, they're going to benefit because those bigger fields for today and tomorrow at Golden Gate, they will focus on that. And there's going to be, I think, more Golden Gate action than typically. I'll ask Tommy Masses when we get Tommy on here. That's a guess.
I can totally see
that. I'm just guessing, but it makes sense. The guys that
with the big fields,
because you're not going to have some of the places that you typically count on and where players focus are just not going to be available to them, in terms of prices and options for field size. So. Just something to think about. We'll canvas players later. We'll start our coverage at 2 o'clock this afternoon, Pete and I, and a parade of visitors. And, Gus, enjoy it. We'll catch up with you as the weekend unfolds.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Steve. It's a pleasure and really looking forward to this weekend.
Gus Alonso, everybody. Bogey and Bogey, the number, 1967. I was going to say 63, but that would make you older. Though you don't need to be this close to 60 like me. Gus, thanks. It's great that you're here.
I appreciate it.
Gus Alonso, everybody, and we'll stay right here. We'll get Kevin Kirstein in, and I want to do is actually let me get a picture of the two of you. That's a good idea. That saves me here. Get a little picture. Do you know Gus at this point? Yeah. Yeah, all right. Exactly. Oh, it's a one big happy family over there at CDI. It's a love fest. There we go. I love it. All right. KK, take this on the other side. It's easier to go face to face. I'll see you. See you when we wrap up. And there we go. Yeah. How much fun to have Gus in the flesh. Unbelievable. Kevin Kirstein, the KK on the scene. Huh?
Yeah, it's we're here. It's day one.
It's
day one, man.
You got to be excited. And those of you that have heard from Kevin when we're at Derby and Breeders' Cup and, of course, Philadelphia native and...
Go Birds.
Go Birds, exactly. Fly Eagles Fly. New coaching staff starting to take shape.
Yeah, that's, we're promising. We got a lot of time left. Yeah. We're getting there.
There's nothing wrong. I lived through teams so bad before you were born that nothing is going to unnerve me when it comes to them. I lived through Eddie Kiat and Mike McCormick, and forget it. I don't. Not going to be concerned about where we are right now with a good core, and you got to be happy where you are considering how much contest play had you participated in.
Hardly any.
Unbelievable.
I'm a maiden from a 5% barn going up against all the best in the world this week, but it's cool. It's definitely a different scene for me, and it's a different format than my brain's used to with the $2 win place contest. I qualified in the live money contest at Keeneland, and so retooling my brain to this win place contest is very interesting, and my brain doesn't really work that way, but trying to teach to work that way over the last couple of months has been a fun process to go through.
Well, and that's the challenge. There's so many players, and we had that conversation with Chris Couples. I was talking to Tommy Massis. Tommy has qualified the last several years, and a BCBC winner that has kind of just come here and for the fun of it and really, you know, not that, you know, he didn't take it all that seriously. He said this year he's got an angle on it, and, you know, he wants to really, you know, really apply himself for the 2 days to try to get to the final table. And so he's going to change up a little bit of his approach. And, you know, Nick just talked about this, Nick Tamaro, minutes ago, about, you know, being better known as a cash player and a, you know, the betting challenge style as opposed to the mythical win place. So it does force you to, you know, kind of change your thinking. And what's got to be frustrating for some guys that have to face this is adjusting and changing an approach and then missing horses that you would have bet or you would have keyed under challenge rules and under challenge settings, if you know what I mean. Like gravitating to a 6-to-1 shot when you would have happily taken the 3-to-1 shot and keyed it over, you know, three horses and tries.
Exactly, and that's sort of what I've been going through trying to prepare for this tournament is, so it's that sort of exact same strategy. And then when you look at, so say take Mother Nature out of the equation for today that we're dealing with, when you took her out of the equation, essentially, you have to have a pretty solid day Friday, Saturday to make it Sunday regardless. But if you use the benchmark of winning 30% of the 36 races out here that we have to play, you're going to have to average about an 8-to-1 winning price in order to make it to Sunday. So just using that benchmark, it's tough to pick or have 3 8-to-1 shots on any single card winning on a daily basis. So that's sort of what my mindset was going into it. It's like, okay, well, I have to have an 8-to-1 average if I want to have 30% win rate over the next 2 days on these 36 races. And so obviously if you have a really good day, and today especially, then you can lower that sort of benchmark price for Saturday or vice versa. But it's really that's sort of my strategy going into it.
Well, you mentioned the conditions. We are off the turf now officially at Gulfstream. They're calling the main track good, so barring any other passing showers, the track should begin to dry out. So that's the Gulfstream news at Laurel. Let's see where they are with Laurel, because there was snow and precipitation up and down the coast. They're calling it sloppy at Laurel. So, and of course, we know that there's no New York whatsoever. And at Tampa, and this is important, and actually they had their announcements, they're fast and good.
I got some steam from Tampa early this morning. The good thing is, like, I know a lot of the trainers that are at these different racetracks over the winter, so I got a lot of steam in the middle of the night Vegas time of, like, what the weather conditions would be like. The only sort of surprise to me was Aqueduct canceling. And
winds, the high winds.
Which, yeah, that made me retool. I had 3 or 4 plays that I was looking at Aqueduct, but I had to retool with that. But, you know, the good thing was you can handicap Mother Nature a little bit a couple of days out, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
what's your, I mean, what is your, when it comes to the mandatory, do you have a feel and a mentality going in about, you know, just simply picking the most likely winner barring price? Or there's also the approach we hear from very regularly, if there's going to be, you know, 4 to 5 shots and even money shots and 6 to 5 shots, I'll bypass the short price of, you know, the $4 or more or about, and gravitate toward taking shots in those spots. What's your mentality going in?
I mean, so if we use the eighth race today at Golden Gate, which is the mandatory out there, essentially there's a horse who's, two horses that'll probably take a lot of play in that race, and you would have to think if either of those two horses don't win, the majority of the room will have a significant advantage because they will be picking against those two favorites. So you have to sort of go with the majority of the room and find different horses besides the favorite. I'm sort of using a 3 to 4 to 1 sort of benchmark as a favorite. I'm okay losing $10 to people, but I'm not okay losing more than that. So if I see a favorite that's going to be in the 9 to 2 range, 5 to 1, you know, I'm fine with taking a horse like that, that I think has a significant shot of winning. But anything less than that sort of benchmark price, then I sort of have to pick elsewhere, because I have to think the majority of the room will pick elsewhere from the favorites.
How much time and money did you spend? How many contests did you participate in?
Really, I did the Keeneland Grade 1 Gamble in the spring, and I dabbled in a few just smaller horse tourneys qualifiers to get a second seat for the NHC, but nothing really too significant to try and get a second seat. There was a way of me putting my real money into going with the win place mentality instead of just doing it on my own, putting my own money up there and having some more chutzpah to actually play in a couple of these other contests. So I didn't really use too much of my bankroll to get a second seat, but just dabbled in some qualifiers to get my brain going right.
I got to say, and there are some people I've met that are here for the first time that do have two seats. I would think that would be a daunting way to show up here the first time.
Yeah, and I sort of had that same thought process too. It's like, what would I do? And even going through just handicapping and coming up, I have about 30 plays that I'm looking at today, and just going through it, it's like, okay, well, there was a couple of races at different tracks that I liked, 2 or 3 horses in there that would have been good to use for a second seat, but I don't know what my strategy would have been year one going in with a second seat, and so I'm sort of glad that I have the one seat going in just to get my feet wet, and if it works out, it works out, and if not, then I can try for 2 next year.
Well, you know, everybody that participates, not that there aren't, you know, players that get here and are first out of the box, you know, first time starters that have won this, but I would imagine that having that second ticket and, you know, then and having to deal with the zigzag concept and you know, getting frustrated because what you think of your prime ticket and you put the second ticket. I mean, there's so many strategies, and I'm sure it'll come up in conversation this afternoon and over the next couple of days as you know the tickets roll out. But I know a lot of guys will stay on parallel tracks with both before starting to diverge, and then there's others that will completely play them separately, like splitting aces, and you know, just whichever one catches a wave, or you know, make the whatever one turns into the hot hand be the, you know, the prime ticket.
It's an interesting, you know, sort of dilemma to have, and I'm sort of glad I don't have it for year one. But if I would have had it, that would have been a good problem to have.
Handicapping method. Talk a little bit about how you approach races, the tools you're using.
I'm a big replay guy. You know, when entries come out, I'll scan the past performances and do a little bit of preliminary work, and I'll really get down to the nitty-gritty. So my replay work for today got done and finalized on Wednesday. You know, the thing with me being in Kentucky is, you know, I'm familiar with a lot of the horses being on the backstretch every single day. And so once they go elsewhere for the winter, I'm sort of following where our local trainers have been going, to the Oaklawns and the fairgrounds of the world, But these different tracks that are offered today, you know, there's six other tracks offered in the NHC that I have to sort of get familiarized with their circuits. Not that I don't know them, but I don't know them as well as some of the horses that that have been on the back stretches of Kentucky. So, you know, tracks like Tampa and tracks like Aqueduct that I'm, you know, not familiar day in and day out with those horses. Those replay works were really crucial to my handicapping for this week.
And what kind of horses and what kind of ticket building, you know, because you talk about the cash contests and winning that way. But when you're playing, you know, Monday through Sunday, what's your typical ticket look like? What are your favorite approaches?
I'm a pick four, pick five kind of guy. Yeah. I feel like that gives you, you know, you're picking winners. It's tough to bet tries and supers. You know, I'm close friends with a lot of guys that like to key horses underneath and tries and supers and try and get those horses to run third and fourth, and my brain doesn't work that way. I'm, you know, I want to pick the winners, and utilizing, you know, pick fours and fives is a fun, you know, task to go about, to because you're just looking at winners of the race, not horses that will run second, third, or fourth. And so that's what I like to play on a day in and day out basis. Not to say that I don't like to play you know, the exactas and tries, but, you know, probably 70 to 75% of my wagers are pick fours and pick fives.
Well, excellent. Well, I was so excited for you. So many people were just tickled when you qualified. And, of course, you talk about being on the back stretch at Churchill and the 9-to-5 job, or in the case of the racetrack and in the case of night racing, the 5:30 till midnight job. Working in the communications office at Churchill Downs with Darren Rogers. And I was about to text Darren yesterday evening to talk about the Derby Future Wager, Pool 2, and to talk about the announcement this week of the ordering of a 20-stall gate. And then I said, I don't need Big D. We got KK right in town, right here in Vegas. So that so Darren, if you're listening, You're old and busted.
Yo.
this is the new hotness, yeah. KK, because he's in here in Vegas. Let's talk about the future wager, because there are some questions to be asked, and
fun pool, right? Fun horses.
Yes, but there's some horses that showed up in this. Talk about the strategy and what the discussion points were when it came to putting this
Good
list
morning,
of 23 together, and of course 24 at the Mutual Field.
Year in and year out, this is the most difficult pool to put together. It's one of those pools where you have the horses that have done well in the previous year as a two-year-old, but then they're coming back as a three-year-old now and maybe still have not run yet. So your horses like Maxfield and Dennis's Moment, actually, they have to be in there. But some of the other horses that have shown some promises early in three-year-olds, there's a lot of those horses that we could have used in this pool. And so we had a bunch of definites going in, but there was a large contingent of probably 30-plus horses that we needed to whittle down to about 10. And so that's how we ended up with a couple of these horses. You sort of go back and forth and saying, who will people like to bet on the most? I feel like this, you know, John Asher would know this answer, of course, because he was a part of so many of these future wager discussions. But I feel like this could be one of the first maidens that we have in the future wager pool for Peter Erton. And we sort of said, you know, that's sort of an interesting little horse to throw into this race. And running behind Nadal in this race, and that's Exalted. So we threw him in there just because we think that horse is very talented. But the majority of this field was pretty difficult to come up with.
Why would you use, and granted, Nadal, you know, is for now the Justify storyline, but how is a maiden like that selected over a horse like Royal Act, who, you know, who just proved himself in stakes company?
He was one of the also eligible. It was coming down to these couple of horses, and we just said, you know what, we think we'll both be in the 50-to-1 range. Why not try this horse? I think Nadal, just personally handicapping, he probably doesn't want to go that far, and so we thought this horse would be a good horse to maybe throw in there that could get a solid two-turn distance and will probably have some promise come. And it's really sort of a true future wager with this horse, because it's giving a horse a shot that, you know, hasn't proven himself in stakes company yet, and we think has some promise.
It also, one of the things that, that has been at sometimes frustrating has been horses that end up getting hurt after the pool gets announced, and we've had our share of those, and horses whose status was a little bit uncertain, and we knew that Gouverneur Morris was, you know, had started back already, and we had Todd Pletcher early last week, and Todd said he was, you know, he was moving along, and they were, you know, they were in good shape. Honor AP, though, was a little bit more uncertain, and, you know, you guys, Darren, and you undoubtedly on the phone with trainers, when it comes to horses like this, to confirm that they're healthy and that if they aren't showing works up to this point, for whatever reason, that they're close to coming back for works, etc. Talk about, you know, that portion of the equation.
Yeah, that's sort of the most difficult part to go about, is because especially if, you know, they either skip a work or they skip a race that they were going to run in, it's a lot of making the phone calls to these different tracks, the trainers or clockers that are out there that have seen these horses work. Hey, what have you seen in this horse in the mornings? Is he okay? Is he behind schedule? And so we do a lot of those phone calls while we're coming up with the pool, just to make sure we have 23 solid betting interests. And, you know, the other part of this thing, too, is, you know, the field in 24, that's, you know, we want to have some horses that are in the field that may have a shot, you know, that don't want to totally disregard that field wager. It's closed at 5-2 the last 5 years in the Derby future wager, and that's probably a solid number to maybe take for this year's pool tool of the future wager. So it's one of those where we have to do a lot of feet on the ground with our sources from these different tracks, just to make sure all these horses are okay going into this pool, and we don't have to make any late adjustments.
Who do you like in this pool? Who are you going to play?
You know, it's for me, in this pool, I think Gouverneur Morris is a little bit interesting for Todd. It's tough for me to take a horse that's going to be below the 30-1 range. There's so many things that go wrong in horse racing, as we both know, that really can make horses have a hiccup and skip the Derby, or, you know, reroute into different spots. And so for me, to take anything below a 30-1 range, I think is probably not doing yourself any benefits. Gold Street, who just won down at Oaklawn, I think is an okay horse. I think he'll get disregarded a little bit just because he was sort of on a speed-biased racetrack last time out. Steve Asmussen has so many hands in the Triple Crown, and he'll get every single shot to make it there, and I think the price could be right on that horse as well.
Do you play the double at all? The exacta pool?
I'll dabble in it a little bit. I think the field is very live to use in the exacta. You want to make sure you use that field at 5-2. There could be some horses that maybe haven't even started yet that can make the Derby, as we know. But
well, it's getting a little long. It's getting a little late for that.
Well, you know, if you break your maiden now or in the next couple of weeks, you get one shot in the Santa Anita Derby or the Florida Derby. You get 100 points and you're in the Derby. So, you know, it is a little bit late behind the eight ball, but I'll use that. I'll probably throw Exalted maybe into a little bit of the exacta mixes as well. I think the Dennis's Moments and the Maxfields of the world will just be too low for me to take a little bit of a gamble on.
Very good. You mentioned the gate, and that what a perfect segue into the other big story this week when it comes to Churchill. Actually, before we talk gate, the next pool, of course, which will be the second week in March, that'll be the Oaks pool, too. That'll be our Oaks shot.
Yeah, that'll
and
be
the Oaks Derby double opportunity there,
that's
too.
That's always a fun bet to play.
Yes, it is.
Especially, I know, a couple of people that cashed on the Monomoy Girl Justify Oaks Derby double the first year that we offered that, and so that was pretty exciting. So that'll be the first weekend in March, and then the final pool will be the first weekend in April, coinciding with those championship races that the championship season on the road to the Derby kicks off next week with the Risen Star down at Fairgrounds. Only 85 days now.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, let's turn to the big story that really was widely hailed and appreciated, and that is the ordering of a 20-stall gate that'll be used once a year for the Kentucky Derby. And whether it was the safety factor that tipped the scales, because it's something that had been rumored and considered and chatted about a little bit, but frankly, whether the safety was the the tipping point or not, I don't care. This was a absolutely terrific investment for the players and for the owners more than anything, because that 14 and 15, the gap between the auxiliary gate and the main gate, was just an invitation year after year for mayhem. Horses run to open space. The 15 comes diving in. Next thing you know, the 14, 13, 12, you got a pile. This was absolutely a brilliant, not even just from a publicity standpoint. It's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm so excited to see this in action. It's actually getting shipped over here now, and it'll be ready by April for our Scott Jordan and his team to test out before the Derby. We partner with a company in Australia, Sterline Racing, who designed the gate, and they're used to having those large fields in Australia, as we know.
And our team, and UK, the York, they got the 24-stall gate in York.
Yeah, and so we've our team has been exploring this for a number of years, and trying to find the right opportunity to get the 20-stall gate. And so it's really exciting for this to be implemented. And, it's a 120-foot stretch there at the top of the stretch at the quarter pole where the Derby is started. And it's a 65-foot gate. So you add on the tractor distance, it's going to be fit perfectly in that distance. And so I think if you look at, you typically look at the head-on start of the Derby. And when we saw the auxiliary gate, they're – even the outside and inside horses, they sort of have to converge in the middle of the track. And, with a 65-foot gate like this and in that space, I think it's going to just do everyone great deeds if you draw the rail or draw the outside. And not to mention no gap between the 14 and 15 stalls, so no exasperated connections at the draw if they draw one of those two posts.
Well, there's too much, for people don't realize, there you have to pay to enter the race, past the entry box and run, and that's a significant expense, and what, $50,000, and so you you end up in one of those stalls and you're compromised immediately. It's any of the difficult stalls. And I appreciate you talking about the width of the gap, and basically pushing that stall a little bit further, toward the stand side, which will help the one hole as well, and give the horses they'll angle it, right? They angle it a little bit.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see once everything's put together, because we have two tractors that sets up, obviously the tractor on the gate, but then there's a backup tractor that's just behind the gate. So once they add the tractor onto the gate, it'll be interesting to see how Scott Jordan and his team can fit that within the gate, because, if there's enough space there, then maybe, you're moving away from both rails. But it'll be fun to see once it comes in, once it gets set up. So it's, it'll be assembled once it arrives. It's gone on a boat.
I was
right going to
say,
Australia.
How many pieces is it in right now?
I don't know exactly. I just know it's on a boat. It's in transit, and it'll get here in plenty of time
and be assembled. It'll be assembled in Louisville.
Assembled in Louisville by Scott Jordan and his team. And I wonder if we can do a parade from the airport to get it here, but it's in multiple pieces. But it'll be very exciting once we can get it to Churchill, and I can't wait to see it in action.
It would be fun is to set up a time-lapse photography of its assembly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
I'll put you on that.
Yeah,
that's your project.
That.
All right.
Absolutely.
I think they had estimated is the $3 or $4 million investment. Is that the number?
I don't know what the exact number is, but it's a good investment. And anytime that we invest in something like this, it'll be very exciting, especially for, as you mentioned, with the safety of the horses and then the with the no gap there. So for a horse player, it's great.
It's great for everybody. It's a total win-win-win, and we hope that KK wins here the next 3 days.
I got the Tums over there at the table. I'm going to be ready. I'm sitting with like the who's who of the handicap.
Oh, you're in with Clocker and
I'm
and
in with the Clocker,
Matisse's
with,
and
yeah, and Jonathan Kinchin and Dink is sitting at our table. I mean, it is like the who's who over there, and then there's me. if I have a bad weekend, the least I can take away is I'm going to learn a lot from those guys.
Horse Racing KK, who you should be following along with Derby Media. And Kevin, best of luck today, tomorrow, and Sunday.
Let's make it happen.
I am very excited for you. And we're going to be excited to talk to Mike Welch next. We've got Ed DeRosa, who is actually stuck up in the suite in the Twin Spires Players Lounge, essentially, where Ed is giving everybody, all the information and the all kinds of betting guide stuff and clocking reports and everything else that's available at BrizNet, etc. Let's take a break. Maybe our last of the morning weekend preview at the races, kind of a hybrid with some coverage, of course, of NHC. And then we'll start this afternoon in about 2.5 hours, typically right around 2 o'clock. We kick off our run and we go till after the last race of the day. And as we finalize a leaderboard. I also still have to get to you with yesterday's qualifiers. They ended up with a much bigger group than even they had anticipated, ending up with 19 additional players winning in from the last chance, first chance, and three that took next year. They took that they were already double qualified. So that includes Scott Coles, who we talked about yesterday morning, specifically wanting to try to get a second seat, and he pulled it off. He pulled it off. And who? Somebody else, too. There was someone else that I'm forgetting. Oh, Brad Anderson. Brad Anderson, who we talked to not long ago on the show as well from the BCBC. He got a second seat. He was able to parlay the last chance into a second ticket. So pretty fun yesterday, too. And the last race at Golden Gate actually lit the place up. It literally went down, as it always does. Back after this, Mike Welch.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.